What up? Welcome to Homegrown Hustle, where local brilliance takes the center stage. I'm your host, Matt Eichmann. Together, we're about to embark on an inspiring journey. Our community thrives on the wisdom of insightful leaders that are right here in our backyard. And we're bringing their expertise to your ears. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur or simply seeking inspiration, this podcast is your guide. Join us every week in celebrating innovation, guidance, and the power to inspire greatness. Let's explore the stories that shape our local business landscape, and together, let's ignite the spark of excellence.
Curtis Larson, thank you so much for coming out here. One of my good friends out here at Abracadabra headquarters in Forest Lake, Minnesota. How are you doing today, Curtis?
I'm doing great. This is a cool spot. I love how it's evolved over this year.
We've slowly leveled it up and learned through the podcasting process, but appreciate the kind words there. So Curtis has been in the home inspection industry for 6 years now, growing crazy fast. Do you ever find yourself having people ask you, like, why are you going so fast, or telling you to slow down? Is that something that ever comes up?
I'd say less from the general public and more from my family and the people in our office.
Gotcha. But yet you keep going. Like, you're an accelerator guy. I know we were talking about processes before we got on here, but what do you think about when you're growing your business?
Our main focus at Marigold is, regardless if it's on our radon side or our home inspection side, is that we want to be a customer service business. We want to provide the best value to our customers as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's what has propelled our growth, is when things go wrong, we fix them. And when things are right, we try to double down and make it even better.
That's awesome. So take me back to the day you decided you were going to start Marigold Home Inspections. What was going on in Curtis's life at that point?
Yeah, so kind of an interesting story. I was kind of in between, not careers, but I had been an accountant for several years. I'd gotten out of a business that I'd had with my dad. And then I actually worked in a children's ministry for 18 months. And I left my job in children's ministry, was going back into more of a corporate setting. And I was like, I don't know that I really want to be an accountant. And a friend of mine asked me to do a business valuation for a home inspection company he was looking at buying. So I looked at that and I was like, oh, I never thought about this as a job. It looks like you could work independently, and then you get to have the customer service side. And I was really missing, I was an accountant previously, so I didn't get a lot of human interaction, the stuff that I did. And so I missed that customer service side of things. But I also saw in our market that we just had a lot of chuck in a truck. So it's one guy is a home inspector, and he only had so much capacity. And so they were only working days, and there's a lot of need for nights and weekends, stuff like that. And I was like, I think this is something that could evolve. And there was only a handful of companies that were multi-inspector firms in the Twin Cities.
So you kind of started as a side hustle alongside your full-time job, or did you just jump all in and you're like, yep, I'm going to do this?
So I was between jobs. I had a great offer to go back into accounting, and I was really heavily considering it. However, I was concerned that I didn't want to do that for 30 to 40 years. I have 30 to 40 years left to work. I don't know that I really want to do that. And so I talked to my wife, and I've always been someone that's been able to hustle and grind and find just a couple. I can make the money if I need to. And so I was like, I was a big basketball referee at the time and football referee. So I'm like, I can just work extra on the weekends and whatever to get by. Mm-hmm. And I talked to my wife about taking this job, and she was like, if you don't see yourself happy, what do you want to do? And I'd already been kind of talking about the home inspection route, but I'm like, it's going to take 12 to 18 months to launch, I felt. And she said, I have the benefits, just make money. I don't really care how you do it. I just want you to be happy. So I jumped all in.
That's awesome to have that type of support, man. Yeah. That's really important as you're going to grow a business. So you kind of breeze by it, but you mentioned a referee company. Yep. Right. So tell me, it wasn't like a little one from what I understand, right? Like you had some people involved in a couple games.
So my first job when I was 14 years old, I was reffing fourth grade girls and boys basketball in Coon Rapids for the house league. So I found out, I signed up for, at the time I was eighth grade. So I signed up for eighth grade basketball. And I was like, hey, do you need referees for little kids? And like, yep. we pay $15 a game for first year referees. I'm like, I'm in. So $15 a game cash. So I started reffing. Then I went to college. And so I went off to...
Where'd you study?
I was in Crown. I went to Crown College for about a year and a half. I was not built for college, but it was, I was supposed to be a Phi Ed teacher. That's my goal. So I got to play college basketball there and I got to just meet a lot of great people. But when I was in college, my dad was kind of in between jobs, getting laid off quite a bit. It was early 2000s. And so he was refereeing a lot just to make extra money. Mm-hmm. And so on Saturdays, he would ref. And then on Sundays, I would go and I'd ref with him. And so it kind of became something that we got to do together. So we got to hang out every Sunday. Sure. I'd make my $80 to $120. And
so you would ref games with your pops or like different games?
With my dad, yeah.
That's cool, man. Yeah. That's super cool. So,
and then it evolved from there. So that was kind of
like escalated quickly.
Yeah, so we were reffing. And then the guy that owned the refereeing company, their assigner, his name was Roy Larson. No relation. And he was looking to sell it. My dad's like, I don't know that I want to go back into computer programming. And he's like, I think I'm going to buy Roy's business. So he bought Roy's business and it was fairly established. It was established in 1979. So it'd been around at that point, 25 years or so when he purchased. And we went from reffing together to he just had this business. And then it grew to the point where he couldn't handle it all. And then I started coming in and just selling to different schools and going out and reffing. And so we ended up with doing about 16,000 games a year. We filled about, and that's like 28,000 slots in terms of officials that we provided. And we had 400 independent contractors all around the Twin Cities. And we did everything besides ice and water is what we'd say. So we didn't do anything with hockey. We didn't do any water polo or swimming or any of that stuff. But if it didn't involve ice or water, we were interested. We did soccer, basketball, baseball, football, volleyball.
Almost like a staffing or contractor for reffing specifically.
Yep. Right. And so we'd work with.
So who would pay? Cities. Like who paid you then?
Usually community organizations. Okay. So it'd be like Chaska Traveling Basketball, or it would be the City of Edina if it was men's league softball. It just really depended on who's running the league. But then there's also these niche leagues. There's a small little church basketball league that used to be really established in like the Golden Valley area. And that was kind of a fun little one that we had. There was like a Hmong basketball league and that was really cool and fun. Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. So you're doing that. And then was that on the side while you were doing the accounting then?
So I was working in education at that point, but it was my full-time job. I've always worked two jobs. I don't know.
Yeah, doing it now too, right? Yeah.
Always. And we didn't have, newly married, we didn't have a lot of money. So like I just worked all the time, but it was a hobby too. So like it was passionate about it.
Would you say that you enjoy work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What has it always been like that?
Yeah, because I've always picked jobs that I like. If I didn't like it, I didn't do it. I mean, to be quite honest, I'll do anything in my business.
Did you learn that from somewhere or is that just like how you were?
I mean, naturally, I'm pretty interested in about everything. And so it's really hard for me to find things that I don't like or find some value in. Mm. But eventually things would just always ran their course and I'd be like, okay, let's go on to the next thing. But I've liked to have money, but I also like to, if you have the work play aspect, like officiating was a passion of mine, even after I got out of my dad sold a business in 2016. And even after I got out of that, I was still officiating up until the pandemic. I was doing high school and college basketball and I did like the state championship for football. And like, it was always a fun thing that we could do. So that's what I like. I got to set everything aside when I go ref those games and be a part of like something that I really valued when I was in high school and college, like competitive nature. And I got paid for it. So even if I had a burger and a beer afterwards, after the game, I'd still walk home with $40 maybe. And it was, there's a lot worse things I could have done.
And you had a good workout too. Like you got to run in the car.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, that's kind of like a theme, like having passion or enjoying like what you do. So it makes sense that your wife, what's her name?
Laura.
Laura. Yep. She's amazing, by the way. She's an early childhood educator too, right?
She's a school counselor. Yeah. School counselor, and then she's a children's author. Yeah.
Yeah. So she obviously saw that in you and supported that. Mm-hmm. And then now you've got what? 20 employees, two businesses. Yeah. Looking to add some more. Like tell us a little bit about what your plan is with Marigold here moving forward.
Yeah. So when I initially started Marigold, my thought was like, hey, we're going to have 5 inspectors, 3 office staff. We're going to be like one big happy family. Everyone's going to make decent money. And we're just, it's going to be able to just be like an easy business. Now, as we evolved and grew to that size, I felt like I didn't gain any freedom that I thought I'd get when I had 8 employees, including myself. If I went away for vacation, work stopped in a lot of ways. And like, I was still a very much a needed part, a cog to the wheel to make it turn. And so we just kind of blew past that and thought like, okay, well, we'll stop at 10 employees or 12. And then it's just kept to continue to grow. And so I think there's always a place where that stuff stops. There's a healthy spot where you just have diminished returns on adding more people and adding more inspections or revenue. But I don't think that we've hit that yet here in this market. And so I don't know exactly where we're going to grow, but I mean, we started out in home inspections. We saw a need that, hey, radon mitigation is something that's needed. And we do a lot of radon tests. It's a natural lead source. So we were able to bring that into our business, which has been, it's been an interesting 18 months of growing that. We've been at it, I guess, almost 2 years we've been at that. And it's just not a, it wasn't quite as simple as I thought it was going to be going into a new industry.
So as I'm thinking about like your experience, like you've found these really small niches of customers or lead sources to drive the businesses that you're part of, whether it's those community organizations or real estate agents with home inspections, or you're just leveraging the real estate with radon. Like, you've had success in all of those areas. So how do you, like, when you're thinking of, let's just talk about real estate agents since you've had so much focus on that. So like, there's a lot of real estate agents, right?
Yeah.
Especially in the Twin Cities area. Like, I don't know the exact 19,000. Number, but yeah, there's like, so when you're thinking about, okay, there's 19,000 opportunities, like how do you go about getting in front of those people to make sure that they know when it comes time for the home inspection to happen, which happens not 100% of the time, but pretty often. Like, how do you make sure that those people know like Marigold is the right fit?
Yeah. So I think it's really about being consistent in your actions. That's everything. It's not just sales. I mean, if our inspections weren't consistent, that would be an issue. So consistency, I think, is the key to it. And that's where we try to consistently be meeting with new agents. We also try to maintain the relationships with our agents. We want it to be more than a transactional relationship. We want to know when their children are born and to like if they have hobbies or special interests. I think it's just important as humans. Like, I think if you bring that human component into business, like, it adds a lot of value and it adds a lot of trust. When you have personal connection with people, then you're able to just believe in them and just know that like, oh, they align with me in this particular area of life. Even if it's family camping is where you align, that's super important. Or it could be religion or politics or
some type
anything.
Of connecting point, right? So how have you been able to have consistency of getting in front of those 19,000 agents?
A lot of different ways. I don't think you have to have multiple funnels.
Which
always, right?
Which one are you like the most proud of, I guess?
I guess the one I'm most passionate about is the good time. So like, we like to sponsor events. We like to, the back of our office, we have a bar with dart boards and a golf simulator. And like, we like hosting people there. It's fun to host people there. And then we like to just be at like, Ron, who's my kind of lead salesperson. Ron is amazing. And he does these like little pop-up happy hours where he'll invite like several agents from different, like all around. He doesn't, I don't know that he really tells them that there's going to be other agents there, but then he ends up with like 8 agents that all brought a friend and he just connects with them so well. He can have a conversation with you and you know, he's not like trying to look past you for the sale. And I think that's, we just are intentional in that. We try to treat every agent the same, whether they do 1 transaction a year with us or 100 transactions a year with us. I want them to feel just as special.
That's awesome. So when you've worked with as many real estate agents as you have, like there's different levels of success that every agent has, and there's also different goals, but the ones that you see selling like 100 or having 100 transactions or like some of those bigger numbers, are there like things that they do in their business that drive towards that success? Like if you had to like look at a trend there.
Consistency. I think that they either have like really regimented routines and that's where they bring consistency, or they like, and that could be like getting up, eating breakfast a certain way, having meditation, getting into the day, or it's they go to the same places all the time. These are the places where I get my lead sources. Like some people, you'll be like, okay, hey, how'd you get like 14 buys in 1 year out of one bar? And that's just because they talk to people at that bar, you know, or it's just like having touches with social media. I always think it's really interesting to see there's so many different ways to get to 100 transactions. I'll find out about realtors I had no clue it even existed because they don't do anything with social media. They don't come to the events. And then someone will like plop them in your lap and like make a warm introduction. And they're like, I didn't even know this person exists. And then there's other people that are more in your face and do more traditional forms of marketing. And then you know definitely who they are, even if you don't like them or understand, like you have different perceptions of them. It's just the familiarity because you've seen them so many times, whether social media or billboards or TV commercials or just being out in social settings is...
Gotcha.
That's interesting.
So tell me a little bit about the Radon scenario and like how that came about. Cause that's only been like what, a little under 2 years you've been doing that.
Yeah.
So when you're going through like running a business that's scaling really fast, what are you thinking when you're like, yeah, I'm going to start this other business up too? Like what's going on in your mind at that point?
I mean, we see opportunity that like, hey, it's going to benefit our clients and our customers that we have currently. And that's a main focus of ours is like, hey, how can we bring knowledge of the home, make their home safer, give them the ability to just to have a longstanding relationship with us? Cause most people, they go into a house and they're there about 5 years, 3 to 7. And then they're looking for the next house. And like, it's hard to stay in the forefront of their mind unless we have real estate agents or we have different business opportunities that can bring us there. Now, the luxury of when we're growing really fast as a home inspection industry, it gave us ability to jumpstart our Radon business. We have a lead source that's bringing in leads immediately. We have the finances to be able to fund a business losing not profitability for several months, which you don't necessarily have. I didn't have that luxury when I started out as a home inspector. I was like, I need to scrape by with like these random house tools that I had basically to get going. I'm like, oh, I got a ladder. That'll work. Oh,
just I got a tablet.
Let's go. And now we can do it right. And so that's kind of the sum of what's there. But we also see with the Radon business, we're like barely scratching the surface of what the opportunity is in the Twin Cities.
So if you had to go back to when you were like the guy that like had a ladder and like some tools from his garage to run his business and give that guy some advice, like what's some things you wish you knew at that point?
The biggest things I think I would do for anyone that's like starting out a business is just encourage them. Like sometimes you just need encouragement when it's slow and it's like, it's inconsistent. And you're like, am I doing the right thing for my family or myself? So I think that guy was doing pretty much everything right. I was at that time, I had so much free time on my hands. I read a lot of books. I wish I could read as many books nowadays. I just don't have quite the flexibility. And that's something I tried to implement into my daily life. But with the, like, I was able to read a lot of books. I was able to like question everything I did in the home inspection business, like everything I did down to like, why do I test this? Could I test this better? If I didn't understand something, I had time to research it. And so continuing to do that and just hone your craft and just have people that support you and like encourage you. And if you have a small business owner that's just starting out, I would highly encourage if you can buy their service in any way, that's such an encouragement. Like I had some of my first sales were to people that I hadn't talked to in 15 years that just saw on Facebook that I was starting a home inspection business.
And they support you.
And they knew me. I mean, like they knew me and that's why they supported me and it meant a lot. And I also really wanted to do really well by them because of that relationship too.
So you were talking about questioning everything. I mean, coming into something new and not knowing much, you kind of have to question a lot.
Yeah.
But do you do that in other areas of your life?
I think every area of my life. And that's probably comes down to like little ADHD.
Skeptical? Are you skeptical of things or is it like you just want to understand?
I would say I'm one of the most skeptical optimists you've ever met in your entire life. I think there's a way there. Just like, do you have to be skeptical about like, hey, how am I going to get there? But there's always a path there. Just like we were talking about the 100 of the agents.
There's 100 path.
There's a different path. Just how is the path there? Is it worth your time to go down that path, or is it not? And so I think as long as you're creative and as long as you're aware and able to evaluate what's going on in front of you, it's not that big of a deal.
There's always a path there.
I think so. There's so much opportunity around us. I think as entrepreneurs, like sometimes you have to like have blinders on to the opportunity because you need
too
to
many
do
shiny things.
Yeah. What's right in front of you? Can I do it really, really well? Because that's more important than spreading yourself too thin.
Is there like we've talked about this before just in conversations you and I have had, but like, is there like a practice you have or something you do to like not chase the shiny things?
I try to have a sounding board. I mean, like I try to, there's several key members in our company that I consult with on pretty much everything. And then my wife as well. I try to consult with her on the majority of things. Then I also have just friends that are, maybe they don't have like any direct experience in our industry, but they're just smart people that understand discernment. Mm-hmm. And so being able to connect with them and just ask them what their thoughts are on it, or maybe they might have hold a key to the, or the key to the door, a piece to the puzzle that I'm not aware of. And so just being able to understand like, hey, you used to do this line of work. Is this worth it? What were the big hangups that you had? And just continue to do research around it.
So
when it's a good idea, you got to jump. I will say that.
Yeah. I was just going to say like, you're a test the water with both feet kind of guy. So do you just go like off your gut instinct, like with some things when it comes to decision-making?
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, you have to say, hey, am I passionate about this? Do I have the energy to drive this? And then also just looking at like analytics, like I'm a big numbers guy ever since I was trying to figure out baseball stats and baseball averages when I was in the first grade. Like that's what I would do the math to try to figure
trying
out
to hit
like
400 or something.
Like what's this guy need to do to break records? And so numbers have always driven me. So I really quickly I can look at a business and make a fairly accurate assessment of like, hey, is this doable or is it not? Or an idea and say, is it doable or not? And then it's a matter of like, when you decide it's doable and you decide it's where you want to go, you just got to go.
That's kind of profound right there. Have you ever said that before out loud?
No, I just make up
That's
stuff.
That's a good one. We should definitely clip that one out. Being that you come from an accounting background and you have that like experience with the numbers and understanding a business from that perspective, do you think that that's given you an advantage in your ability to scale your business because you can look at it at that level?
I think it gives me an advantage to assess things quickly. Sometimes that can be tricky though. I can look at something too quickly and not dig into it deep enough, then realize 3 months down the road that was a bad decision.
Do you have an example?
Primary example. Generally, it comes down to like we're running so hard in one direction. I don't take the time to, like, for example, right on mitigation. For a while, our process wasn't honed in. I knew it wasn't honed in. Like, I had enough understanding to be like, we need to fix this, but everything else is running like so well over here, and it needs attention as well, that I didn't take the time to stop and figure out like, hey, how can we make this more efficient or fix it? And it's generally a simple answer that, again, probably my ADHD that like I'll end up avoiding because takes a lot of energy from me. So it's taking a lot of energy to like stop and like really dive deep into it instead of being like,
so you just choose to focus over here pretty much.
Well, you're like I know, like, I just don't know how to get the answer. And so I'm like, since I don't know how, I don't know where to go. But once you stop, like sometimes I'm like, oh, I just had to click this button and then it fixed the whole thing.
I felt that way. You're so an idiot. Mad. But that's really interesting because it, like, it's the same thing where for my email, sometimes like certain things, like I know, like I could get done and I should get done. If I don't like plan a time to get it done, it usually just sits there unread type of thing. How do you like knowing that that's kind of your tendency? Do you ever feel like you're like missing out on those opportunities you're always looking for because you're backburnering things like this? I mean, I feel that way myself sometimes.
I just don't think like, I used to deal with FOMO. I don't deal with FOMO with business decisions. I'm like, maybe if something really great comes along that I missed the boat on. Yeah. But most of the time it's going to be me driving something forward, and it hasn't been like, hey, come along for the ride. So I think that's where I just decide, like, hey, what's most important in my life? What are my priorities? And my priorities are my family. Like, I need to have a healthy marriage. I need to coach my kids' sports and to be active in their parenting. And like, yeah, could I do more if I traveled around and and I travel quite a bit, but if I traveled more, could I accomplish more? If I hired more people, could we accomplish more together? Yes. But just understanding how to do it in a way that reflects back on, like, our primary business is home inspections. And so I've always said, like, whatever we get into needs to be like when I started Marigold Home Inspections, no one expected it to be an A plus company. They were like, I'm hiring someone that has no experience, so this might be a C or a B or an A. Like, but now they know, like, we're established, we're an A plus. And so anything we bring in alongside, if we bring in radon mitigation and we do it at a C, it's going to detract from our main business. And so I try to make sure that whatever we're going to do it really, really well.
So what are some of the things that you had to overcome or achieve in order to go from not being viewed as an A plus company to having that status and permanence?
As a new entrepreneur?
A new entrepreneur or a new business owner, particularly with Marigold. Like, what did you have to do to start to prove to people almost that you are that?
I think you have to prove that you care about the little details. You have to be humble enough to, when you don't know the answer, you don't fake it. You just say, I know the answer to this. Let me get back to you tonight. Those were some big things that happened for me. Also, just like getting reviews. If you know a young entrepreneur, please review their company. If you think they do good work and you've worked with them, review their company. It really impacts. We get so much business now that we have, I think we're up to about 1,300 five-star Google reviews. And it's like a lot of it comes from that. We don't advertise on Google. They'll search home inspector, and then we have 1,300 and another guy has 6.
How do you get 1,300 five-star Google reviews?
Automation, 100% automation. So after we finish every job, 2 hours after, they get an email that says, hey, we'd like you to review us on one of these platforms or all of them. And then they review us.
Just one email. That's it.
One email. It's email and a text. It's 2 hours simple. After.
It's simple.
Yeah. If anyone wants to know the company that we use to do that, please reach out. I won't put them on here, but they are phenomenal in terms of they master that science and they keep it from going into people's spams. And I think we get about 36% response rate on the jobs that we do. So my other question I always ask myself is like, okay, so we have 36% people think we're a five star. They took the time to at least like click five stars. Yeah. They don't have to write anything. What is the other 64%? So like some of them think you're a two star, just don't have the balls to say that you're a two star. Yeah. And so how do we identify those? How do we get a response rate?
It's crazy. You're looking at the things that you maybe are lacking, even though you have so much success. Like you're just looking for those areas to still get better and improve on your service and quality. That's awesome, dude. The world needs more business people like that. Because like that's what actually like matters at the end of the day is improvement. Like we can have all these different things, but unless you're like constantly getting better, like what are we doing here?
I mean, it really sticks with me, and I don't even know the guy's name, but I was umpiring baseball when I was first starting as an umpire. And my goal is like, hey, maybe I can make it to the Big Ten someday. Like that'd be cool. Mm-hmm. Do Big Ten baseball games. And so I had some good mentors, and these mentors like pushed me along to have like partner, because you don't have the same partner for all these baseball games. So they would mix me in with other good umpires. And there's this guy, and he was kind of a prick. He wasn't the nicest umpire. Like I didn't really connect with him on any socially outside of we both had a passion for baseball. And I just remember after the game, he's like, asked me if I want feedback. And I've wanted feedback. I can take feedback even if you don't like what you're, like if you're going to tell me something that you don't like about me, like it's really not going to crush my soul, and I'll evaluate it and I'll decide, hey, is that something I really care about or not? Depending on what it is. But he said, I remember after that game and I was looking to crack into college baseball, and he said, here's the deal. I want to give you all the tools to be able to be as good as I am. And then if you're better than me, you win. And if I'm better than you, then I win. And I was like, the competition aspect of that, like, I think is really key. But also, like, why are we withholding information from those that we can propel upward, regardless if they're going to stay with us or they're going to, like, move on and they might find something better. They might not be a home inspector anymore. They might go into remodeling, or they might become like a YouTuber or whatever it is. Like, why are we keeping them from their passions, or like keeping them from being our competitor? Like, there's no reason to.
It's not like in order for you to win, they have to lose.
Right.
Like, everybody can win.
Yeah. Growth mindset.
Abundance. Yeah. That's so important in business and in growing. Like, the mindset of an individual, especially a business owner, what I've seen is, like, in their minds, oftentimes they put like these self-proclaimed prophecies that actually like become their own limitation just because of how they're thinking. And that, and you have to like challenge those things as a business owner. Is that something that, actually you said that earlier already, like, you just question everything?
Right? I question everything, and my team questions me about virtually everything too. I mean, like, it's important. It's not my favorite thing all the time, but it's important.
They question it because they want to better understand.
I think sometimes they question because of understanding. Sometimes they question because they don't agree with it, and I think it's good to be challenged. Sometimes they have their own views on where they would like to see the company go. And that's what we try to breed entrepreneurs inside our company, like people that really want to drive their area forward. And when you breed that type of people, those type of people inside your company, they're going to disagree with you. And they have this channel. Hey, where do we want to go? And we just come back to, like, does it fit our mission, values, and culture? Our culture is super important to us. Does it fit into that? Does it fit into what we're trying to provide for the consumer? Does it fit into what we're trying to provide for our employees and our teams? And a lot of times, I don't know that there's a wrong answer. They're just different answers, if that makes sense.
It really does. So what, like, you're talking about having slow growth this year with like 50% growth, which is crazy, by the way. Like, what do you want to achieve now, knowing, like, I know your family's starting to get a little bit older. Your kids are getting a little bit older. So, like, with Marigold, is this something that you just want to continue to scale, or are you thinking more of these other services alongside, like, Radon and other value adds you can have to these new homeowners?
Yeah. So, like I said, I'm interested in pretty much everything. So I really enjoy it. We've gotten some national contracts over the last couple of years. So, like, I frequently travel to Denver and Colorado Springs, and now Austin is another place in which are like three great places to travel. There's, when I was selling insurance for, we didn't go into that, but I sold insurance for a short blip, especially when I was starting Marigold too. It was like another thing that just kind of fed into, like, hey, let's make sure we can make enough money to get by. And I drove to some horrible towns in Iowa and South Dakota, North Dakota and Minnesota and Wisconsin, all those places. And like, those aren't the places that we're going to. And so I've really enjoyed just being able to get out, see the world, see different business perspectives. I think there's a massive amount of opportunity nationwide for us, and not necessarily just staying in the residential home inspection game, but I think there's opportunities outside the real estate market for inspectors. And I think a lot of times we get our blinders on. We think, oh, I have to be tied to the real estate market because I'm an inspector. And realistically, like, we can go into commercial inspecting, and we do commercial inspecting. We can go into, like, we work with a lot of HOA and community managers that, like, or we'll go in and view full condo associations or townhouse associations to try to make sure that their maintenance needs are being kept up. And then I think there's a mass amount of building that's going on right now. Quality assurance is lacking in a lot of areas, especially for the larger builders of apartment buildings and 55 plus communities, because they're having to move so fast. I mean, just so fast. So, like, where can we go within those scopes? Insurance, like, there's new regulations. Just being aware of the other things that are coming down the pipeline. I think that's where Marigold Home Inspections is going to grow. And then through that, it's going to show us the paths where we should grow outside of that. But I would love for us to have, right now, revenue-wise, we're doing like $70,000 to $90,000 in the Denver market. And so, and I'm doing that like in four trips out there. We just go and we work really hard. Usually I bring one or two guys with me and we run
Let's
really
do
hard.
More of that, dude. That's,
yeah, and it's fun. Good. But there's also like, we aren't in the residential home inspection market out there. And I'm like, well, we have all this other business in there. Like, could we tie someone into what we do and provide support mm-hmm. for them? However, at our size, I don't know exactly how to do that. That's something that's like, it's one of those problems over here that yeah. I need to stop and figure it out before I can do it. It might be a simple solution. It might be something that you go, oh, nope, that doesn't make sense.
Maybe it's a who, not a how.
Yeah. And a lot of times it is like hire talent.
So this, I'm interested now. So this HOA townhome condo scenario. So mm-hmm. this is very different than a transaction, right?
Right.
Like you're still assessing the structures and looking for deficiencies or inefficiencies, but like what is that service actually?
Yeah. So what we have, and it's realistically been made up by the Minnesota market, is a preventative maintenance inspection. So Minnesota put down these statutes because townhouse communities are starting to get run down that were built in like the 70s and early 80s because HOA communities are run by board, don't necessarily have money. And so then some communities they're not all equal when it comes to that stuff. So they put in you need to have a preventative maintenance plan. So that way your siding's not all deteriorated and your roofs aren't all gone or your decks aren't bad. And so what we do is we come in and look at anything that's association maintained. So if the association maintains it, we look at it. If it's homeowner maintenance, we don't look at it unless it's like something that's egregious and like, they might want to know about this. But basically we walk the exterior of all these structures and we're looking at like, hey, what's the siding look like around it? Do we have any loose or damaged siding, rotted siding? What's the roof look like? Soffit fascia, utility penetration. So where your HVAC system goes in, we're trying to make sure that
business,
we're trying to make sure you aren't getting as much business if they just are preventative. So unfortunately,
I mean, it's kind of the same thing though. Like a lot of what we find is like the deferred maintenance, right?
Where
there hasn't been attention to something for an extended period of time. And that's why there is an issue. Mm-hmm. So like you're kind of doing the same thing just in a different way. Like maintaining structures is more than like making sure you pay the bills. Like there's other stuff that has to be done to maintain like the structural integrity and like prevent other worse issues. Right.
Right. 100%. And
that's the whole purpose.
We put in a nice clean report and it says like, hey, you have 17 gutter issues or downspout issues. Mm-hmm. You have 12 concrete issues. You have these utility penetrations that need to be sealed up. And then the community can go back and go, oh, this is something like the concrete's a big deal and it's going to cost a lot of money. We need a budget for this. We can do some simple caulking and take care of some of these utility penetration areas. And we can look at painting to extend the life of these areas. And so that way they can create a plan that helps just extend the life of the materials that are used in their construction practices. And we do those on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll do it for 2 years and they're like, hey, we haven't done anything with the last 2 years report. So like, can we take a year off? We're like, sure. But it's on an annual subscription basis with us, which is really nice. And a lot of times we see a lot of change in those communities because they just needed someone to point out
where they
should go. Yeah.
But because not every manager has time to inspect every one of the properties that they manage, because it's usually not just one association that these community managers are managing. It's usually like they've got four or five and there's hundreds of human beings that they have to like make sure they're happy collect rent from. And like, that's a tough job to be in. So like what you do saves so much time and like prevents a lot of those issues that they run into with tenants complaining about an issue or whatever it might be.
One, if you are a community manager, like the big thing that they run into is they do these what are called spring walks or fall walks. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're familiar with them, but basically they do what I'm doing, but they're going around with people from the board and they're saying, hey, this is what's going on here. We have these issues at this house. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of identifying all those issues where we're looking at every single wall. Yeah, a lot more holistically. And then we also are just trying to, I don't walk with community members. So like when they walk with the board members, they hear a lot of gossip of what's going on in the community. And they're like, they want to complain about Susie or Bob or whatever. And I don't have to deal with any of that stuff. I just go around and take a bunch of pictures. And then at the end, if a a president or whatever from the board wants to look at, I'm like, hey, here's the things I found. And they're always amazed at like how many things we found. And I'm like, and I'm going to send you a report now. Ding. Mm-hmm.
That's well, and it's amazing that like they're going to do those spring or fall walks and miss so much, but it's not because they don't care. It's because like sometimes you don't actually know what to look for.
Right.
And a lot of the training that you put in as a home inspection company gives you the knowledge and understanding to be able to provide the information. Anyone can walk around a building, right? Right. Like having the knowledge and then being able to deliver it in a way so that action plans or strategy can be laid out. Because really it's a lot of budget management, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the board comes down to and makes decisions on is there room in the budget for this? And is this a decision we want to make? But right. if they can't even get to the point where they know what they need to make decisions on, these boards just run in circles and it's stressful for everybody. So that's a big thing that you're moving into then.
Yeah, we love it. We've been doing it for 3 years and now we're just really trying to expand our horizons with that. It's a nice break from the residential home inspection in terms of we don't have to really communicate with too many clients. It generally, once you've seen 15 units in a property, like the same issues are reoccurring. Mm-hmm. It's all because, hey, there's water management issues here or they haven't taken care of their siding this is way past its life expectancy. We need to start moving on and budgeting for it. So they can become pretty easy and kind of a break from our everyday routine.
What's like the biggest issue that you see when you're doing these? Like the number one thing that
the preventive maintenance inspection.
Yeah. Like,
For sure, all of these townhouse associations are created by architects that don't ever think about water management. So then all of a sudden all this concrete and asphalt starts going in and then we have deterioration around the foundation. Mm-hmm. And that's where pests can enter. That's where you get a lot of your cracking. That's where you get mold issues on the interior of the home because the water just pours. It's a pretty little arch that's there, but it's bringing double the amount of water into one area than it ever should. And what's your soil composition like?
So how, I guess like it's hard to reverse it once it's architectural. Now you're just trying to play defense to make sure that you manage the water in the best way possible, right? Because you're not coming in and recommending like structural changes. It's more like you need gutters here or...
Yeah, I mean, that could be what it is, what we're doing or where gutters end up like once they start correcting these things, because it's never, they don't have gutters on the house the day you move in on pretty much any new construction neighborhood or residential townhouse community. You look around, they don't have any water management hardly. And so then they start playing defense, like you said, and now we have downspouts and like just going right onto walkways. And in Minnesota, as we know, it gets icy here when it gets cold and there's water.
And then you have a safety issue there too.
And so there's other challenges. A lot of times it's if it could have been caught before the concrete went in, you can reroute it and have some drains that go underneath the ground or whatever you need to do. But it gets really challenging once everything's been built.
Yeah, because we feel this in the pest and wildlife space where we come in and we kind of like point out like, hey, here's all this stuff that's wrong with your house. But then like we try to provide those resources, right? Whether it's something that we can do from an internal service standpoint or like yourself, like you've got a lot of different referrals and you provide resources for the problems you find at these places, right?
Yeah, that's a large focus for us and making sure you partner with the right people because they need to respond into the real estate transaction moves really quickly. So we need them to be able to be responsive and to have the same level of professionalism that we have be a reflection of us. Absolutely. Otherwise it's a poor reflection of us.
And it goes back to that same thing where you got to be A+ rather than C because the C is the detractor of like the net.
Yep.
So if there, like, is there anything else that you want to say about Marigold or like any advice that you'd like to give to anybody that might be listening to this that's kind of growing their business or particularly a home inspection business?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing I'd say for anyone that's entering the home inspection space or any entrepreneur is like, just keep going, find the things that you're doing well and just double down on those things. Those are going to be the things that are going to help you grow. And the things that you find that, hey, these are the things that are going to keep me from growing or keep me from reaching my goals. If you can hire out because you don't have those skills, hire it out. you will never regret it. The $10,000 that it ends up costing, yeah, it sounds like it's going to hurt you, but you won't regret it. It's always worth it.
That's good, man. So I'm going to rattle off a few structural items here.
Okay.
And I want you to say like the first word that kind of pops into your mind. Ready?
Sure.
All right. I put a little bit of thought into this. So attic vents.
That's the first thing that comes into my mind about attic vents.
Yep.
Leaking.
Just interesting. Vinyl siding.
Cheap.
Hardy board siding.
Problematic. I'm an inspector. Sorry. I see the bad things.
Shake roofs.
Maintenance.
Attic spaces.
The unknown for most people.
It's more than one word, but I'll take it.
Unknown. Final answer.
Crawl spaces.
I kind of go in the same, that same unknown. Yeah.
Biggest pest issue.
Biggest pest issue, like, is in frequency?
Sure.
Frequency, I'd say mice.
Something everybody should know about home inspections.
That they are necessary, and it's as you get in a competitive market, there are other alternatives to waiving the inspection.
All right. This isn't a structural term, but abracadabra.
Abracadabra. I think of like the big like pow of like Batman, like the lettering
nice.
Around like the 70s Batman.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Curtis, thank you so much for joining us here today. Curtis, they do a lot on social media. Oh, I got one more question for you. Hold on. Let me slow down here. If you had to define the word hustle, what does that word mean to you in terms of business?
Defining the word hustle, I think hustle is consistency. I think we touched on that earlier, but hustle is consistency. Anyone can sprint, but not everyone can like run a marathon. And so the people that I see that have the greatest hustle, no one says that they have the greatest hustle when they did it for one day. It's can you do it again tomorrow?
That's good, man. I like that. Well, Curtis, if anyone wants to get in touch with you or Marigold Home Inspections, what's the best place for people to find you?
Best place for us to, or you to find us is Instagram, Marigold Home Inspections. I am on there also with Curtis W. Larson. And then you can find us online, marigoldhomeinspections.com, or Call Marigold is our radon business, calledmarigold.com. And then we also, you can reach our office, 763-567-2181. We answer the phones from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. They can get you in contact with me, or you can get a home inspection. Thanks again for having me on. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. This is great.
You always make my mind, you make me think creatively, which I really appreciate, man.
That's kind of you to say, man. I just love being in front of awesome people like you and talking about your business, man. You've had so much success. There's a lot people can learn from you, and I hope somebody, at least one person, got one good thing from this. I know I got a bunch myself. So thanks again, Curtis. Looking forward to talking with you some more.
Oh, thanks,
dude.
Thanks again for joining us on Homegrown Hustle. Our local business community thrives because of the brilliant leaders right here in our backyard. And it's been an absolute privilege to provide them with a platform to share their invaluable expertise. Stay tuned for more insight, wisdom, and inspiration from our local business champions. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Together, we'll continue to nurture and expand our homegrown success stories. Matt Eichmann signing off till our next insightful episode.